Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 69. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer, and joining me today is LaMondre Pugh from Columbia, South Carolina. LaMondre is a public speaker, consultant, advocate for people with disabilities, and he currently serves as the CSO for Rue Global Impact. So, LaMondre, really excited to have you here, man.
Kevin, I'm excited to be here, man. Thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely, and I'll get to this in a minute, but we actually met through a mutual friend of ours who is a columnist for SMA News Today, Helen Baldwin, and I'll get to that in just a minute. But so if you've read any of Helen's columns, you may have seen LaMondre's name out there. But right. So really excited for this episode. And before we get started, if everyone could please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Genentech, the makers of a new FDA-approved treatment for SMA. To learn about our study results across different types of people with SMA, visit approvedforsma.com. That's approvedforsma.com.
Okay. Well, LaMondre, to start off, as I just mentioned, you know, we met through Helen Baldwin, a mutual friend of ours. And I remember the column she wrote. She wrote two where she had mentioned you. One she went a little more in depth about, but she wrote about her experiences at the elementary school that you attended, which had many students with disabilities. So I'm really curious what that experience was like for you. Cause like, I mean, for me, it was like, all the schools I went to growing up were, quote unquote normal. Like, I mean, I was really one of the only disabled students, or at least definitely the only one with SMA. So I'm really curious what that experience was like. If you can think back to your elementary school years, being in an atmosphere where there were other students with disabilities and what that was like for you as a young student with SMA.
Right. Well, I tell you that was a long, long, long time ago, Kevin. But I do remember it. And the school's name was Brockman. And it was amazing because that was my first experience with traditional education. And it was a school that was set up for students with disabilities. And the disabilities were varied and it was an extremely wide range of disabilities. And it was really amazing. It felt like a family, and it wasn't just an elementary school. I mean, you had kids there that were, you know, kindergarten age all the way up to 21 years old. Wow. So it was a huge range of ages. And honestly, it was like a family. And when I say it was like a family, I don't mean just amongst the students, but the teachers' aides, the janitorial staff, the cafeteria workers, everyone knew everyone and everyone cared about everyone. And it was just, I've never seen or experienced anything like it since then. When I was about 13 years old, I was mainstreamed into the regular public school system. And I went from being a child that was around, you know, a bunch of students with different disabilities to where I was the only child with spinal muscular atrophy in the school, and actually the only child in a wheelchair at the school. But, you know, and the experiences were night and day. So when Helen Baldwin wrote about her experiences at Brockman, she captured it so beautifully. So if you get the opportunity, go back and check out that article. It's an incredible article, and what she said in it was so true about the little school and the people there and just how those bonds have been formed throughout it all. And one of the cool things about Brockman and being with so many students with disabilities was the fact that the disability wasn't an issue. It wasn't a thing at all. We had other things that went on, but the disability wasn't a thing. You know, and so it was really I believe that it really changed the trajectory of my life.
That's awesome. No, and like you said, I think also Helen really captured it really well, and I will link those columns in the description for this episode. But and so that I'm really interested in too is when you transition to, you know, quote unquote a regular public school. You know, what was that like in terms, you know, going from where disability isn't a factor to, okay, all of a sudden you're like the only wheelchair user at the school, was it intimidating? What were, like, the emotions? I mean, I know this is a long time ago for you, but what were some of the emotions and thoughts that went through your head during that transition?
Well, you know, I remember it vividly because it was such a big, it was such a big point in my life. And the reason that I transferred from Brockman to a traditional school was because while I loved Brockman and while everything was beautiful there, I felt, I have a sister who was a year older than I am, okay, and she was so much further ahead of me academically. And honestly, a large part of that was because I did a lot of therapy during the day and those kinds of things. And, you know, so I felt like I was behind, and I simply could not get the I could not get what I needed academically in comparison to where my sister was. Now, this was not my mother making this comparison. This was not my teachers making this comparison. This was me at 12 years old saying, wait a minute. I can do her science projects, but I'm not getting those kinds of assignments. I can do her history projects, but I'm not getting those kinds of assignments. And so I went to school. I lied, actually, Kevin. I lied. I went to school, and I told my teacher, her name was Miss Hewitt. I said, Miss Hewitt, my mother wants to speak to you about mainstreaming me to another school. Then I went home, and I told my mom, hey, Mommy, Miss Hewitt wants to talk to you about mainstreaming me into a regular public school. And the way that my mom, she was very much like, okay, well, if that's what you want to do, you set it up. You do that, and you bring me in where you need help. So that's what I did. I arranged the meeting, and that's what got the ball rolling. So when I transferred to W.G. Sanders, I transferred into the eighth grade. And as you said, I went from being where I was amongst many students with disabilities to where I was the only student in a wheelchair. Of course, there were other students with disabilities there, but I was the only student with the obvious disability. Right. And I was very nervous at first. And it was the kind of thing where when you're the new kid at the school, and these kids have had at least, you know, many of them, because, you know, everything was based on what neighborhood you grew up in, many of them had gone through their entire educational experience together, and I was the newcomer in this. So it was kind of intimidating at first, but the thing that I love about kids are cool. Whenever you get into a situation, once they kind of understand, okay, why is this different or what this is about, then things kind of go back to, okay, we're kids, you know? Right. And that's what happened. That's exactly what happened. You know, we had our challenges and we had our successes. One of the things that really kind of helped me was the fact that I did music. I was musically inclined, and I was a new kid there. We were in chorus class, and the chorus instructor asked who in the class knew where middle C was on the piano. So I raised my hand because I knew I could play. And she asked me to go over to the piano, and I ran the scales for the class. And she was just picking out everybody's voice part. And when she came to me, she said, okay, now it's your turn to do it. So I sang the scales. And when I sang, everybody kind of perked up. And at that moment, I went from, my nickname is Bubba, okay? I went from Bubba, the kid in the wheelchair, to Bubba, the kid who could sing. And that kind of changed everything, because now the thing that was special about me wasn't about the chair at all, but it was the fact that I had a talent, I had an ability. And at that time, Bobby Brown's I Want a Girlfriend was just come out. That was like one of his first singles, I Need a Girlfriend. And the girls surrounded me on the playground and told me to sing, and I sang that song. And after that, all the girls hung around me. So all the guys hung around me, too, because they were after the girls. So, you know, it was a great experience, man. It was a really great experience.
That's great. I remember, I think in one of the columns, Helen mentioned that you had sang at one point, too. So that's really cool. But yeah. If you remember that, too, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, too, about your sister and your mother. Can you talk a little bit about your family life growing up and kind of like what part that played in your life?
Everything. I mean, my mom and my sister, they are my rocks. They are my foundations. I grew up in a single parent home, and it was always just me, my mom, and my sister. And we lived with my grandparents. Of course, my grandmother and grandfather were there as well. But my mom is Superwoman. There's no question, no doubt in my mind. And she was very much, and still is very much, my biggest cheerleader, my biggest advocate. But she's also the person that holds me accountable. Even as I told you before, she has always been like, if there's something you want to do, you need to take charge and go after it. Because she always taught me that people will treat you the way that you teach them to treat you. And so if you want to be treated well, you demand that. You show them what treating you well looks like. And she has always been that. Now, my sister has always been my co-conspirator. And it was always us. As I told you, my nickname is Bubba, and her nickname is Pooh. And so it was always, as in Pooh Bear. And so it was always Pooh and Bubba. You never saw one without the other. And for me, in terms of a role model, I couldn't think of a better role model than my sister, honestly. She's one of the most hardworking people that I've ever seen in my life. She's very committed and very talented. She's a nurse practitioner. And I saw her go from being a phlebotomist in her early 20s to getting her nursing degree, getting her master's degree, and then becoming a nurse practitioner. And she is just a phenomenal woman. So I come from a rich lineage of very strong, powerful women, and it's amazing. And I realize that family is everything to me. And I may be a little more sentimental today because yesterday I lost my grandfather, and the environment that I grew up in. So much of it should have been the other way. As I said, I'm a product of a single teenage family. It was supposed to be the exact opposite of what it is. But because of that environment, because of the people that surround me, because of the circle of support, because of the mentality of my mother, because of the support of my sister, our lives turned out totally different than what statistically it was supposed to be. And so family is everything to me. And what's really beautiful about this, and I would imagine this would be a large part of your experience too, disability was never my problem. It was never an issue for me. Now, don't get me wrong. Yes, I face obstacles. Yes, I face challenges that are directly related to my disability. Yes, society is not set up for people with disabilities. And yes, we had to overcome some of those obstacles. But for me and my house, it wasn't an issue. I'm Lamondre. I'm Bubba. That's who I am. And I'm a part of this value. And they always required excellence from me. And so that's maybe a long answer, but that's the truth.
That's fantastic. No, and I want to say too, I'm sorry to hear about your grandfather's loss, but that is a really powerful statement about your family. And it's so important to look at that in relation to disability and just, your perspective on things. That's huge.
Yeah, so
really, thank you for sharing that. Well, Lamondre, before we get into the next part, let me pause for another brief word from our sponsor, and then we will get back right to it.
This podcast is made possible by a sponsorship from Genentech. Are you living with SMA, or are you a caregiver for someone who is? A new treatment has just been FDA approved based on studies of different types of people living with SMA. Genentech extends a special thanks to all of the individuals, families, and healthcare providers who participated in the studies that led to making this new treatment option a reality. To learn more about this new treatment, visit approvedforsma.com.
Awesome. And by the way, to listeners, if you're hearing any static in the background, I apologize. My computer is being a little wonky, but I'm going to try to turn my mic off while Lamondre is speaking, so hopefully it won't be too much interference, but always the joys of podcasting. But anyway, so LaMondre, I think that's a great perspective on your childhood and growing up. Thinking now about your young adult years and like what that was like. So, you know, what was it like for you the first time you decided to, you know, I'm thinking about college and just like growing up and gaining more independence. What was that transition like for you? Because I know it's different for every SMA person out there once they reach college age and, you know, what decisions you make, whether you want to leave home or what, you know, what was that for you?
Right. Yeah, it was definitely a different kind of time, for sure. As I said, I was mainstreamed when I was about 13. So that meant that I really only had 5 years experience in a traditional public school system. And so I had actually, I had to play some catch up academically. And I did that. And by the time I was a senior in high school, I really was looking at, okay, what do I want to do? Because literally I had to work my way out of resource classes into college preparatory classes. And it was the kind of thing that when I look back at my academic record in high school, I did really well in terms of my grades and everything. But I was thinking, hey, I really want to go to a major university. But because of the trajectory that I was on, I didn't meet a lot of the requirements. So I ended up going to Midlands Technical College, which is a 2-year college. And honestly, that was one of the best decisions that I could have made, because first of all, it gave me the opportunity to really, really focus in on the subject matters that was at hand. It allowed me the opportunity to stay at home so that I could figure out the whole accessibility thing. And you have to realize this was back in the early 90s. So this was, in fact, you know, the ADA wasn't signed into law until 1990. So when you start looking at it from that perspective, many of the things that are in place now were not in place at that time. So accessibility was a real challenge. But that's why I chose to go to Midlands Tech. And it was a great experience for me. I became chairman of the Student Advisory Board, which is student body president of the campus. And I did a lot of advocating in terms of accessibility and advocating for the various campuses to get funding. And it's so cool to go back to the, because they have multiple campuses throughout the Columbia area. It's so cool to go back and look at new buildings that they built off of the funds that we went and raised during that time. So for me, the decision was about accessibility. It was about attending care. And it was really about the educational goals that I had set up for myself. And honestly, I know everybody's path is different, but I would say be true to whatever your needs are and be true to whatever your desires are. Because what I also found was everybody else had a plan for me, which was not congruent with the plan that I had for myself. But ultimately, I chose my own path, and I'm happy that it.
That's a great point. Yeah, I mean, it is like so different from every individual. But like you said, you have to determine your own path and what works for you. So that's
right.
Great. Yeah. And now, you know, obviously now you have a very like diverse career doing public speaking, consultant work, your CSO role. Can you talk about the evolution of that career path and how you got to where you are today? Like what kind of things you did before then? I'm really curious about all of that.
Right. Well, while I was in college, I got a job at the Disability Action Center, which was South Carolina's first Center for Independent Living. And a Center for Independent Living, for people who don't know, I'm not talking about like the assisted living facilities. The Centers for Independent Living are basically organizations, nonprofit organizations that are set up to assist people with disabilities to live their lives as independently as they choose to live their lives. And they offer things like information and referral, advocacy training, independent living skills training. And I was hired on, first of all, just to work on some projects with them. And then I was hired on they called it IL specialist. Then I became the lead advocate and so forth and so on. And it was great because that opened my world up to, you know, actually advocating from a legislative standpoint and really working on systemic change in terms of the advocacy work that I did. But that's also where I discovered I really, really love training. I really love speaking. I really love communicating with people and seeing the light bulbs come on. Because literally, because it was South Carolina's first, we created all of the programs that we were working. So if we wanted to do something, we had to create it. If we wanted to make something happen, we had to make it happen. And so that really kind of, I kind of cut my teeth there. And what I realized after a while of working there was I had so many other interests that was outside of the realm of disability. And I will tell you, it is easy. It is so easy to get so enthralled in disability advocacy that you become consumed by it. And many times you forget about the other areas of your life that you're passionate about. And so what I started doing was I realized that many of the same things that I was teaching the consumers that came through DAC, and that's what we called the DAC Disability Action Center, were some of the very same things that people without disabilities needed as well. And so I started creating programs that reached beyond the disability perspective, and I started doing those things kind of on my own. And I left the Disability Action Center and struck out on my own as an entrepreneur. And of course, as an entrepreneur, you have your ups and downs. You have your the feast and famine effect. When things are good, they're really good. But when things are bad, hold on, because this is going to be a bumpy ride. And it certainly was. But then through that, I also got married during that time when I was about 29 years old. And, I just did life. Now, what ended up happening after I left the DAC, I was doing my business, but of course things are up and down. So I also got a job working for the Best Buy Corporation. I sold computers at Best Buy. I was a computer salesman for about 4 or 5 years. And while I was there, though, and this is the thing about being an entrepreneur and being a person who really wants to make a difference. I got really bored in selling computers. And even though I still have my business on the side, selling computers to pay the bills, I was bored in the store. And I decided, I was like, well, what can I do with Best Buy to make this experience better? Not for me, but for our customers. And so I created what was called the Best Buy Access Initiative, where I looked at and I said, what can make the environment for people with disabilities better when they come into the store? Because at that time, we certainly had a website, but it was not, you know, people were still brick and mortar was still the primary way people shopped. And so I created this program called the Best Buy Access Initiative. But then after that, I started looking at, well, wait a minute, what would also make it better for employees with disabilities here? And this initiative, because I had a great general manager in the store, he helped me find the right people in district, and then it went all the way up to corporate. And the Best Buy Access Initiative, I found people in the company who were doing similar work, but on a corporate level. And as a result of the work that we did together that year, or the next year, Best Buy won the New Freedom Initiative that was presented by the White House for the work that we did in accessibility. And so it just opened so many doors for me. So I was speaking at a conference about that. And the CEO of another company heard me speak. And when she heard me speak, she came to me and she said, I'm going to steal you from Best Buy. And she did. She did. And then I went to work for a company called Tech Access. And what we did at Tech Access, we made certain that electronic communications were accessible and met Section 508 standards and WCAG standards for people with disabilities. And, I worked there. I made it all the way up to vice president of marketing and sales when I was hired on as a business development manager. And after that, I started, and that's when the economy crashed around that 2010 area. I struck out on my own. And I've been doing my own ever since. And just about a year ago, I connected with the Rube Global Impact, which was also the CEO of Tech Access. And we've been doing things to impact the world ever since. And what we do at Rube Global is we're a multifaceted disability inclusion firm that really seeks to do social good and help companies and organizations build environments where people truly belong. And it's not just people with disabilities, where everybody, no matter what the diversity, really has an opportunity to thrive and bring value in those environments. And so it's the work of my life, and I absolutely love it.
That's fantastic. And what I like about your story the most there is that, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm a huge proponent of public education, but one thing I don't like that they teach you is, like, they have you do those career tests, you know, when you're a kid, and, like, see, like, okay, this is what you're good at, this is, like, the career path that you should follow, and it's, like, they train you to do that one thing and pursue that, and it's, like, right. I think, like, your story is a perfect example that you don't have to have, like, one set job or occupation that you stick with. Like, you can have this set of skills and ideas and goals, and it carries you into multiple facets. And I think that's perfect for people with disabilities, because, like you said, I mean, the system often does work against us, but you're right. Living proof that you can work around that, and you can come up with your own ideas and develop your own professions. And I think that's just really cool. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, but
yeah. Do, man. I'm gonna tell you, man, you know, I started my business because, you know, I did a lot of interviews, man. I did a lot of interviews, and you know, when we're on the phone, I blow people away over the phone. They, you know, be impressed with my resume and all this kind of good stuff. But then when you actually went to meet with them, it was the kind of thing whereas, oh, okay. And all of a sudden the position has been filled, or it's not open anymore, or what have you. My thinking was, okay, if you don't see the value in hiring me, I will hire myself, and I will solve those problems for people, because that's ultimately that's what it is. It's what problems exist and how can I solve them, and who sees value in that problem solved. And so that's ultimately what entrepreneurship is. And that was the route that I chose. So if they won't hire you, hire yourself. And believe me, I want whoever is listening to this right now to understand that it's out there. I'm not saying it's easy, because it hasn't been. I've made some sacrifices. I've had some hard, hard times. But the truth is, it's possible. You can indeed do it. So find out what you're good at. Find out what you like doing. And find out what it is that you do better than most people. Hone those skills. Do that. And find people who need that skill. Find people who need the problem solved and offer the answer, but offer it at a price.
That's great advice. I love it. And before I get to, I want to switch gears in a minute, talk a little bit about treatments, and because I know you made some videos about that. But one last question about this is, and I don't want to dwell too much on COVID, but when we met about a month ago through a Cure SMA virtual social, you had mentioned that, you know, prior to COVID, you were doing a lot of traveling with work and all that, and now, you know, entirely remote. Can you talk a little bit about how that's been affected and, like, what your day-to-day looks like now, you know, without traveling, and how you're doing your work, you know, virtually and all that?
Yeah, man, we do a lot of Zoom and Google Meet meetings and those kinds of things, and it has changed a bit. It's changed because you present differently when you're not getting feedback from your audience, when you don't know if the message is hitting, when you can't see the heads nodding, when you can't hear the yeses or what. So it's changed the way that I present. And honestly, man, there is nothing like a face-to-face encounter. So while we're still being productive, while we're still making things happen, I can't wait until we can at least start some travel again. Now, I'm not fooled. I don't think the world will ever go back to what it was before. I believe that we now are still figuring out what this new normal is. But I do know that we will get back to some face-to-face encounters. And so it's definitely been a transition. It's definitely been a change. But, I mean, it's easy in a day to do three or four you know, Google presentations or, you know, Zoom presentations. And, you know, you need to have a lot of water nearby because of that. But overall, the adjustment has been pretty well received. But there has been a shift in the way you do things and how you project so that people can get the message.
Sure, that's great. No, I know what you mean too, about having a lot of water and, you know, fluids nearby, because I've been working from home for like 3+ years now. So Yeah, I know how that goes, but that's great. Well, Andre, thank you so much for sharing that. That was fantastic. And for the last kind of part here, I had watched on your YouTube channel, you've made some videos about starting at RISD and what that process has been like so far. So if you can just talk about that experience and, you know, I mean, seeking a treatment, what it's been like so far, and if you notice any effects so far in the process, any of that, we'd love to hear.
Absolutely. So I'll just kind of start at the beginning of my treatment journey. I have a little cousin. Her name is Ariana. She also has spinal muscular atrophy. And she started with Spinraza, which I thought, you know, I saw the results that she got from it. It was amazing. So at the end of the year, 2019, I had gone through the process of, you know, trying to figure out if this was the treatment option for me. I decided that it was. I had gotten approved for it. And the thing is, though, I have a full spinal fusion. So in order to receive those treatments, you know, you have to have lumbar punctures to do that. Well, because I have full spinal fusion, I was going to have a laminectomy. And so I was all set to have that in February of 2020. Well, something happened in February, couldn't do it, so we had to push it up to March. But what happened in March? COVID-19 happened in March. And so my thinking was, well, until we get a handle on what's happening with this pandemic, I'm going to put it on hold. You know, so I did that. And so April, you know, May, June, July came around. I started thinking, okay, this thing doesn't look like it's going anywhere anytime soon. So I need to start looking at getting this whole Spinraza thing going again. So I started the conversations again. Still didn't really feel comfortable about it because, you know, we started seeing little spikes and bumps kind of happening there in terms of the infection rate of COVID-19, but I was still moving forward. But then I saw a video. You know, I follow Shane. I can't remember the name of his channel. But anyway.
Squirmy and Grubs. Yeah.
Squirmy and Grubs, absolutely. And so I started, I saw a video where he was talking about how, you know, he had to pause his Spinraza treatments. But he was like, but, you know, I'm looking at Risdiflam. Like, what is Risdiflam? What is he talking about? And at the time, it had not been approved. So I did the research. I looked at it. And then the very next month, it was approved. And so I started doing the research. I started having conversations about it. I reached out. I found a PAL, which is a patient access or a partner access liaison with Genentech. And great conversations. I did the research, started learning about it. And the immediate benefit that I saw was the fact that I don't have to have any lumbar puncture. So that meant that I did not have to have a laminectomy, which, you know, that means no surgery. So it's a much less invasive option. And sure enough, Everest was approved. And so I started my journey in terms of trying to get approved for it. And so a couple of months went by. I got denied twice for it. And on the third time, I was approved. And I started it last week. So last night, I had my 7th dose of Everest. And this is what I have experienced so far. I do feel an increase in energy. I feel like I have more stamina now. And honestly, I understand that I probably should not expect to see very much until about 2 or 3 months down the road. But honestly, I do feel more energy. And I don't know if that is the placebo effect because I'm excited about it or what. But I really have not had any adverse effects. I know one of the side effects is sometimes nausea or diarrhea. I have had a gripey stomach yesterday I had a really gripey stomach, but otherwise experience has been all positive, and I'm feeling really good. As I said, I don't know if this uptick in energy is just because I'm excited about the treatment, but this is day 7 and I'm still feeling it. So, and I did not feel that uptick in energy until about 3 days in. So I'm really thinking that it's the result of the treatment itself. And I will say, with this, I chose Eversley because it's less invasive and because it seemed to fit better with my lifestyle. But I would strongly encourage anyone to look at the various treatment options that are available and do what's right for you. But this honestly has been a great experience so far. And the company Genentech has been wonderful to work with. So I have nothing but good things to say. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the progress of this. And you know, if anybody's interested and they want to see it, check out my YouTube channel. It's LaMondre Pugh. It's my name. And I'm also on Facebook, LaMondre Pugh, as well. And one of the things that I will do is, and that I have done, is I will be very transparent, because I want people to see exactly what my journey has been. And honestly, as an adult, sometimes it's tough to find information from adults living with spinal muscular atrophy and what their experiences are. So that's why I decided I would be that. I would put that information out there so people can have some firsthand knowledge of what it's like being an adult going through this particular treatment and seeing what my process is. In fact, there was only one other person that I saw that was doing videos, and her name is Allie. And Allie Williams, I believe her last name is. And she's amazing. She's absolutely amazing. She's a rock star. So check out her YouTube channel as well if you just want more information about someone living this experience and what it looks like.
That's great. No, and I'll definitely link your YouTube channel in the description cool. as well. But yeah, and it's really interesting because, like, I know Spinraza and Evrysdi work on similar levels. It's a similar kind of, just obviously very different method of delivery. But similar to you, like when I started Spinraza, I think I did notice that boost of energy pretty quickly. And I think, you know, it probably is a combination of like placebo effect, but also it does tend to have that effect, I think, pretty early on as well. It is like an right. energy booster. And so that's really cool to see.
Yeah. And, question for you, man. Yeah. Did you, because this is something I do my dosing at night. Uh-huh. That's when I do it, right after, like I eat dinner, and then right after dinner, that's when I do my dosing. And at night, I do notice, I feel a tingling, like when I'm sleeping, right before I go to sleep, I feel a little tingling in my body. Was that something that you noticed?
I actually did. I don't think I notice it as much anymore, but that is one thing I felt kind of early on in the process. It makes sense because it's like, okay, it's a new medication entering your body, and it is, you know, it does provide an energy boost and that kind of thing. But it's funny you said that. I really do remember that pretty vividly from early on. Like, again, I think now it's like I've gotten more used to it. I mean, I've been on Spinraza for coming on 3 years now. So, mm-hmm. It's like, I think I've had like, it's probably around like 11 or 12 injections, something like that. And so I think I've gotten really used to it, but I remember that early on in the process, it was something that I felt and experienced. So that's really interesting that Evrysdi seems to be having that as well. That's really cool.
And see, that was the thing, you know, again, not having spoken to very many people about it, these are the kinds of things that I want to talk about. I want to know, you know, okay, what are you feeling? Because you don't see that, you know, that's not written in any studies or anything like that. But I kid you not, man, it's like every night I'm feeling it, you know, and it's like, okay, is this me or is it? And so I have to ask that question, man. So it's cool that you felt the same thing.
No, that's a great question. And I imagine, like, you may even feel it more with the Evrysdi because, like, that's a daily medication. So it's, like, it's probably going to happen. Because, like, Spinraza obviously is, like, you take, when you start it, you take 4 injections back to back. And I'm similar to you. I also have had a spinal fusion when I was in, when I was going into 6th grade. And so I could not, I also could not do the lumbar puncture. I do mine through cervical injections. So shots in my neck, which I've written about and you talked about many times before, but like was intimidating the first time I did it, but it's actually gone really well for me. And cool. I trust my team every time. But yeah, I do remember the tingling and like, and I think effect wise, you know, it's different for every person. For me, one of the things that I didn't notice, but family and friends started to notice, like, you know, after the first few injections and early in process was like, they were like, wow, your voice is so much better now. And like, yeah. I've always had like a, been able to project well. And, you know, I did theater growing up. And so like, I always utilized my voice, but I like, especially in later years, like I would, you know, I think subconsciously kind of run out of breath and then my speech would be slurred a lot. And I wouldn't even notice it, but it was something that, like, it would frustrate me a lot as a kid because people would say I'm mumbling, and I'm like, I'm not mumbling. I'm just, and, like, I didn't even realize it, that it was, like, an energy kind of thing. Once I started Spinraza, that improved drastically. So that was a really interesting effect for me, too. But yeah, it's really cool. Now I'm excited for your journey. And, yeah, no, to our listeners out there, definitely check out LaMondre's videos. We will link those in the description. Yeah, absolutely, man. And wrapping up here, I know you've already given some great advice, but I always ask people on the show if you have any advice for others in the SMA community about any subject, whether it comes to daily living, career, relationships, whatever it may be. Do you have anything you want to kind of close out on and say to people listening right now? Even if they're not in the SMA community, any advice you would say to anyone right now?
Absolutely. I do. A lot of times when I speak, I close with this. Live big, live full, and live authentic. And I know grammatically that's not correct. But I think the sentiment is true. The reason that I say live big, live full, and live authentic is, first of all, your life is as big as you make it. And what I mean by that is that don't be afraid to be fully who you are, to walk big in the person that you are. And I don't care if you're a person with a disability or not, or if you grew up in poverty or not, or if you're the CEO or the richest person in the world, it does not matter. Be full in who you are. And when I say be full or live full, I'm talking about enjoying the experiences of life. Whatever it is that interests you, whatever it is that you're into, do it. Stick your foot in the water. No. Don't just stick your foot in the water. Jump into it. Really experience that and live authentic. So often, we have a tendency to devalue who and what we are based on what we do, based on where we live, based on our income, based on abilities. But the truth is, you are valuable because you breathe, because you're here. And here's the thing. The only way to really, really, really enjoy and experience life is to enjoy and experience it exactly as you are and who you are. You know, I often think about people like myself. For the longest, I suffered with perfectionism. I was so stuck on being perfect that everything, every T had to be crossed, every I had to be dotted. And sometimes I'd say, sometimes my I's are crossed and my T's are dotted. But the truth is, perfection should have never been the standard. Because the thing that I realize is that the world doesn't need your perfection. The world needs your presence. The world needs for you to show up exactly as you are, exactly. Because that's when your light can be seen the most brilliant. And yes, that does require some levels of vulnerability. And yes, sometimes that means that you will fall on your face. But guess what? I would rather fall on my face being exactly who I am than to be stepped on trying to pretend to be something that I'm not. And the truth is, if you are not living exactly as who and what you are, you're not living your true self and you will be stepped on. And I just believe that that's what we're here to do. We're here to just be that light and to bring whatever light we can. my goal is to make the world a better place before I leave here. You know, that this world is in a better position than when I came. And I don't mean that I'm doing world-changing things. I'm just talking about that I do what I can do with the abilities that I have to make this environment better. And I believe that if we all do that, that's how we change the world. It's the aggregate of us pushing together that changes the world. And I know some of this sounds so pie in the sky and so idealistic, but the truth is we are to reach for ideals. Again, not perfection, but ideals. And so I appeal to the better nature of us. I appeal to that part of you that says it's possible, that says you're valuable, that says you are enough because you are. And that's it. I'm done. I don't have a good ending. I'm done.
Dad, when's your book coming out? Because that's poetry right there. I love it. No, oh, that's fantastic, man. You ended it perfectly. I could not say anything better. So, man, LaMondre, thank you so much for coming on today. This was a great conversation. I can't wait to get this out to the listeners. So, thank you so much for sharing. And yeah, we'll definitely link your YouTube channel in the description. And where are you on social media if people want to find you?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook at LaMondre Pugh. And I'm also on Twitter at LaMondre underscore P. I'm on Instagram at LaMondre underscore P. And of course, like I said, I have the YouTube channel and you can just catch me at LaMondre Pugh. And Kevin, let me say this, man. I appreciate the work that you do, man. I do. I really appreciate that. I love the openness that you've shared in the things that you've shared about your journey through the work with SMA News today. So, man, keep up the good work. And I will tell you, there's a young person that's watching you. There's a mother. There's a father of a child with SMA that's watching you and seeing the possibilities that they have for their children. Because, as you know, many times when this diagnosis comes to a family, a lot of times it's kind of bleak. It's looking rough. But you are showing people through your example that you can live an amazing life, brother. And you are living an amazing life. And I appreciate that, man, watching you. So keep up the good work, my friend.
Bro, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. That's great to hear. But awesome. Well, LaMondre, thank you again. And for our listeners out there, you can hear more stories like this by subscribing to this podcast. We're all over Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on our main website at smanewstoday.com. Follow our YouTube channel. Join us on our forums. Follow us on social media. We're all over the place, so we would love to hear from you. And again, thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care, everyone.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com and be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.